Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to our June coaching call and Q&A here on June 16th, 2016. It's great to be here, and a couple of quick just reminders and announcements before we get to live questions. The first is we're in the middle of an implementation week. As you'll start seeing, and if you look at the schedule on the welcome page of the student portal, you'll see that we've been in a phase of the program where I'm giving you some training more sporadically. So rather than training back to back, I'm giving you a little bit of training, then giving you a week or two, in most cases just a week, to implement the material. Also, because some of you are now starting to land a client, engage in some conversations and so forth, I'm trying to be mindful of that. So I want to give you time to be able to work on those things and to be able to work on your prospecting. So there's less training now because now it's mostly about execution. It doesn't really matter what your timeline is or how you're approaching it. At this point, you can really dial this up or down however you'd like. So I'm giving you some breathing room. So in terms of training, in terms of kind of slowing down the training, so you have the flexibility to absorb the material, catch up on the material, and then act on it accordingly. So just keep that in mind. We're going to continue this pace from now until the end of the program. Next week we're going to get into a session on advanced warm email prospecting strategy. So I've already given you the basic training on that, but hopefully you've been able to implement some of it. Now the more intermediate advanced material will make more sense. So if you're a little behind, that's fine. I've gotten a couple of emails from folks who feel a little behind. Don't worry about it. Keep in mind this information is here. You have lifetime access to it. The best way to kind of get back on track is just to create a little plan for yourself. You know, if you recognize that you're behind, just figure out where you left off and then figure out what you have to catch up on and just create an actual plan. You know, treat it as a project. Okay, great. So I'm three sessions behind. This evening I'm going to go through the first one that I missed. Tomorrow or the next day I'm going to go through the second one, maybe over the weekend, and then next Tuesday I'm going to go through the third one, and then that way I'll be caught up. I know it sounds simple, but that's really the only way. And I say that from experience because, hey, I take courses myself, and I fall behind just like anybody, and that's how I do it. That's the only way I can do it, if I actually set a schedule and commit to sticking to it. So with that, let's go ahead and go to the Q&A. And again, if you have a question, everyone is on mute right now. So if you have a question, just dial *2 on your telephone keypad. That will raise your hand. Just remember, only do it once, because if you do it again, after you've done it the first time, it lowers your hand. So *2 raises your hand. It creates a queue, and I'll unmute you, and you can ask away. If you're on the webcast, meaning you're listening to me through your computer speakers, you know what to do. Just simply type in your question. I'll call it out. In fact, I've had a couple of questions submitted already through the webcast, so let me go to those before because I don't see any raised hands yet. All right, so the first question is from Taylor. Taylor says he's frustrated and a little bit stressed. He says, most of the potential clients I meet say they're interested but can't do anything right now. The ones that do jerk me around and never respond. I'm running low on funds and feel like I'm taking two steps backward every time I take a step forward. How can I turn this around? How do I fix what I'm doing wrong? So listen, Taylor, I hope you can appreciate the fact that from the very beginning I've told you guys, look, this is this is not an easy journey. This is going to test you in every possible way. I think you could probably see some people are getting success, but look, just like anything worthwhile in life, it's most people, they have to work really, really hard at it. So, you know, this is not uncommon. The first thing I want to explain here to Taylor and everyone else is this is not uncommon. Don't get frustrated. I mean, I know it's easy to do, easier said than done, but this is to be expected, okay? And many times you have to try harder than you think just to get the success you want. So it's about resetting the expectations and just realizing, you know, I'm in this for the long term. How bad do you want it? And, you know, when in doubt, you can always increase your effort. So the first thing I would – it's hard for me to diagnose exactly what might be happening, Taylor. I don't know if you're on the line and you want to chime in and we can have a conversation about it, because it's hard for me to tell you what you might be doing wrong without knowing exactly what you're doing, how much of it you're doing. Now, here's what I can tell you. There have been a couple of studies done on this, and both of them came up with very similar conclusions. And this is very insightful. In virtually any industry, in any endeavor out there, when you look at a group of 100 prospects, just kind of a sample size of 100 prospects, only 3% are actively looking for what you offer. Okay, so it doesn't matter if you sell a product, if you sell a service. Only 3% are actively looking for a solution that you offer. So in our case, only 3% of targeted prospects, and I say targeted because, you know, you can't just take your neighbor down the street, right, who wouldn't even be a prospect for you, let's say. So assuming you have a group of targeted prospects, only 3 out of those 100 are actively looking. There 40% or 40 out of those 100 are actually about to enter or will enter very soon a buying cycle, meaning they're going to start looking at some point in the near future. Okay, and then 56% are nowhere close, so they're just not interested or will be interested anytime soon. So where I'm going with this is this. Only 3 out of 100 are actively looking. So you're essentially looking for people who have something right now. But you're also trying to find people in that other 40% who could be moved into that group of 3%ers. Okay. So in other words, it's been on the back burner. It's something they're thinking about, but they're not actively looking. And what you're hoping for is some of them, when you engage with them, we'll realize, you know what, I need to go ahead and start. I actually have to do something about this. I need to get this thing written, what have you. So that's what, but it's not going to be a large percentage of the 40 because, again, they haven't entered that buying stage yet, that buying cycle. So statistically speaking, it's difficult to find those 3%, right? 100 marbles in a bucket, all of them are blue, and 3 of them are red. What are the chances that, you know, you'll if you're blindfolded, that you'll actually get the one of the reds? That they're low. It's a 3% chance every time. So keep that in mind, Taylor. I mean, again, if you are on the phone or if you want to give me a little bit more information, I'd love to know it. One of the things I'd like to know is if you could refresh my memory as to your target market that you're going after. Also tell me how you've approached it, if you've been following the, you know, start with your network and then if you then gone to the solid prospect list. And then third, give me an idea of the level of activity. So how many prospects have you contacted since you started this process? And that might tell me a little bit more, and I can better direct you then. Okay, Sharon says, I'm a bit of a panic because I'm behind, still on week 7. I do have clients and a number of prospects. Just had a former contact send me press release writing to do with discussions of doing more writing for her clients, so it is great. I'm still working on a website and got stuck negotiating a full-time job, which I didn't take, and then had a week family cruise. Yeah, so no worries. You know, it's you don't have that much to catch up on. Just, again, if you develop a little plan of action, you'll be fine. Here's something I also should mention. We've also entered a phase of the program that it's like you need it when you need it. Let me explain that differently. It's like just-in-time learning. So think about this, like session 6 and 7 are about having that first conversation with your prospect, right, that discovery call. And if you haven't had a conversation yet, it's good to go through it. But when you'll really need that information, when you'll really learn it and internalize that information, is when you're about to have that first conversation with a prospect. So, you know, the first part of this program was really about your positioning, getting your website written, getting it live, and so forth. Everyone has to do that. Like, there's no, okay, well, I'll look at that later. No, you have to do that. But now we're entering the phase where, you know, we talked about prospecting and how to do it. And then when you get a live prospect, when you get someone who's interested, how to have that conversation. So it's good to go through that, but, you know, you can almost skim it. I mean, if it were me and I were in a hurry to catch up, what I would do, Sharon, especially with session 6 and 7, is I would print out the transcripts and I would read through them. And you can do that and get the gist of the process in 20 minutes, 30 minutes tops, right? So that's a great way to catch up. And then what will happen is at least you know where the information is. You have a general idea of how to approach that conversation. And when you have your next conversation, then you'll have that those printouts there in front of you. And then you can use that as your guide, which is what many people do. So they'll use that, especially the handout that walks through the process step by step. It's a better summary. You'll have that next to you, and then you can that'll be your cheat sheet. All right, Sharon had a second question. She says, I still wonder about my niche. In writing my About Me page, I realize that I have lots of success in the crisis communications writing and teaching area, and wonder about trying to specialize in writing your crisis plan, especially in Florida in light of the Disney situation and this weekend's mass shooting crisis. I hate to capitalize on this, but as a former news persona and always news hound, I do have national cred in this area. What do you think? Every business needs a crisis plan, and I have some samples. So, yeah, this is what I would encourage you to do, Sharon, is go back to session 1 where I gave you those 4 different dimensions or areas to consider. Because if you run this idea through all 4 of them, that's going to give you a better answer, right? So I can't tell you, oh, yeah, on the surface from what you described, it sounds awesome. But it sounds awesome in terms of you have the experience, you have the credibility and the track record. I'm curious about 2 things. I'm curious about your network. You know, it sounds like you have a decent network, but could you take this idea and start, you know, reaching out to people you already know and try to get an appointment, right? So can you get a conversation with these people? In terms of the financial, you know, does this stuff pay well? I would guess that it would. And then finally, how do you like that kind of work? So when you think about doing this kind of work, is this something that excites you? Is this something that you think you'd be great at? And I'm getting the impression that the answer is yes, yes, yes. So I'm making some assumptions here, but that's why it's important to run through all 4 of those. I'll also add another insight there. You know, when it comes to plans and strategy and those sorts of higher level projects and engagements, I will tell you that it's a little harder to get in the door, okay? So because you're usually talking about a high-dollar engagement, and this, I'm just saying this generally, because I'm not sure exactly what it would involve, but I suspect that this is not a, you know, $1,000 project, right? So a crisis plan, it could be a large engagement, and if it is a large engagement, you need to come up with, let me call it a productized service. So in other words, kind of a templatized type service that you can offer someone, deliverable, a templatized deliverable that's a lower cost, that's easier for you to get in the door with. So let's just put a number to it. Let's just say that the right plan, I mean, for any company would run at least $10,000. That's a big number, right? That's gonna be harder to get in the door with as your front end offer, front end meeting what you lead with, what you try to get in the door with. However, what if you come up with some sort of audit or assessment that you can do very quickly, yet has high value and high perceived value to the client? And it's a great way for you to get in the door because high perceived value, low cost. Let's say you could do it for, you know, $495, just to throw a number out there. I encourage you to do that because with these types of engagements, high dollar, if you can do a really good job with a low cost, what I like to call a tripwire offer, so a lower cost, kind of a loss leader is another term I like to use, and deliver great value, build trust and credibility, then it's a lot easier to go from that into the $10,000 engagement. Because once they hire you for that one, once they see your audit, then they'll be impressed, and the chances of them hiring you for the bigger engagement are much higher. So something to consider there. I'm happy to talk about it if you'd like. All right, so let me go to the phones. Had a couple folks raise their hand, and the first one is a caller from New Mexico. I don't have a name, but it's a 507 area code. You're on.
Hi, this is Michael Gibson. Actually, this is from Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I must be dyslexic. I switched them over. MN instead of NM.
Is that right? How you doing?
Who's this?
This is Michael Gibson.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Real good. I wanted to ask you a little bit about working with the solid prospect list.
Okay.
I've been doing the warm emails as you've been describing, and I had a situation where my niche is insurance, and I used to work for an insurance company, and I found out who the director of marketing was for the insurance company and sent this person a warm email. And then she apparently farmed that out to somebody else in the company, and they sent me an email message to my email on my website. By the way, I'm using Gmail to send out my warm emails, and I didn't think to check my email on my website right away, so I didn't see the message immediately. And it was actually almost a week later that I found it and realized that this person had contacted me and asked me a direct question: do you have experience with index annuities contract writing? And I didn't have that experience, but not that direct experience anyway. But I got back to this person and said, you know, even though I don't have direct experience doing that, I did do some other lead generation writing when I was working for this insurance company, but with different types of annuities, because they didn't sell index annuities, at least when I worked there. Anyway, this person never got back to me. And then 2 weeks later, I used your approach where I got back to him and said, you know, there's something else important I forgot to mention. And again, there's some time that's passed, and they still haven't gotten back to me at all, which I find kind of strange. And I'm just wondering, what do you do at this point? Do you do any other follow-up, or you just let it go?
Yeah, great question. So I would follow up one more time. First of all, I should mention that it's very common, okay? Very, very common for people to just kind of fall off the face of the earth. Lots of different reasons. I won't really get into them in a lot of detail, but just know, I mean, many times it's not for the reasons we think. Most of the time in situations like this, we assume, oh, we didn't get back to them on time, or, oh, I didn't have the experience they wanted. In most cases, my experience has been that just something else is a higher priority right now. Like they're just slammed. So people are doing the work of, you know, three people in many cases. So it's very, very challenging. And they just, people get overwhelmed. So don't automatically assume that it was you. And that there's a high probability that it wasn't you, that it had something to do with something else. So because of that, it does pay to follow up. I always look at the actions they took to help me gauge how much to follow up. In other words, the more they have done and the more they've shared with me and the more they've asked, the more I will follow up. So if it happened to be just a very casual, oh, okay, well, send me some information, that's a very low level of commitment on their part. And, you know, so I would be less inclined to follow up multiple times. I may follow up a couple of times. But for someone who's asking about something specific, that it got passed to somebody else and they actually took action, that sort of thing, that's a higher level of commitment or stronger action on their part. So I'm more inclined to follow up more times. So you've sent an initial reply and then one follow-up. I would do at least two more follow-ups, spaced apart maybe a week or two each. And, you know, you've already done the first one, but with the, hey, something else I forgot to mention. I think your next one should be, how long has it been since you sent that follow-up?
Let's see, I sent the follow-up on the 14th, actually, just two days ago.
So give them, and it's summertime, too. You also have to take into account the time of year. So a lot of people are on vacation and so forth.
Should I follow up with the person who initially asked me the question or the one that I originally sent my first email to?
I would continue with the person that asked you the question, because that's, if it was forwarded to them, that's going to be your highest probability person right now.
Okay.
And so give them a week from the 14th. So let's see, that was on Tuesday. So check back with them next Tuesday or Wednesday. And then try them back a week or two after that. Now, do you have a phone number?
No, I don't.
Okay.
And the thing is, they responded the same day that I sent out my initial email. Yeah, I mean, in other words, I sent the email to the director of marketing, and then she passed it on to this other person who went to my website and obviously checked a few things out and asked the question that very afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't use, you know, kind of like investments, you know, past results aren't indicative of future results kind of thing. The same thing applies here. So just because they did that once doesn't mean that's the pattern. You can expect that in the future.
Right.
So okay. I would try them in a week, give them a week or two after that, and then try them with another email. And then a week or two after that, if you still haven't heard anything, then go back to your original contact as a last resort. And
okay.
Then, by the way, so in session, I think it was session 7, I gave you a structure and an example script to use as your last attempt follow-up. So use that as your model. That tends to be very effective.
Okay.
Actually, I give you a couple of examples there.
All right, very good. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, somebody else had their hand raised, but I don't see it now, so I apologize. You may have hit star 2 again, which lowered your hand. So if you raised your hand and I haven't called on you and you're still on, go ahead and dial star 2 again and and I'll see it. So I don't see any raised hands right now. So I'm going to go back to the webcast. Okay, so let's see. All right, so Taylor got me some more detail. He says, I can't really do phone because it always cuts out mid-call. My target markets are healthcare, hospitality, and travel, which I recently narrowed it down to because being a generalist was where I found my biggest frustration. Since this program started, I've sent warm emails to well over 100 prospects. I've also been to several networking events. As for my network, I don't really have a very large one. I recently moved to Fort Worth, and I'm still just getting to know people and going to events. And to mention my experience, I graduated from grad school at the height of the recession and was never able to get a full-time job at a company. But I was a journalist, but nearly a decade ago, so I'm constantly unsure what to say to people about my experience. I just know I love to write and have been doing it for a long time, big chunk of it creative writing. Thanks for the help. Okay. Let me just give you the default action that I always go back to when else fails, and then we can maybe come up with something a little bit more specific. My rule is this. When I'm doing the best I can in terms of strategy and approach, so in other words, I have a prospecting plan in place, I know who I'm going after, I got the right method, so warm email prospecting, for example, and I've done the best I could with my positioning and my website, I will then, if I'm not getting the result I want, I just try harder. And by harder, I mean not get more desperate in my tone. Just means I make more attempts. So well over 100 prospects, I would just keep going. You know. So I had someone from a group, I want to say it was three groups ago in this program, B2B Business Launcher, who tried, I want to say it was, I need to look her up to know exactly. I want to say it was 144 warm emails before she got her first client. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. But she just knew that if she just kept going, you know, eventually she would find someone. Okay. So when in doubt, everything else being equal, just keep going. Keep going. There's no magic number. Sometimes it takes longer. And depending on your positioning, it could be harder. So everything else being equal, from what I'm hearing, Taylor, is that, you know, you don't have a lot of years behind you in terms of a career. You graduated just a few years ago from school. So, you know, in terms of your network, you don't have a huge network yet. And you didn't have a lot of years in either the corporate world or out there and just, you know, in the world of work before you started doing this. So those things kind of work a little bit against you. Does that mean you can't do this? No, not at all. It just means you're going to have to try harder. You got to make up for that in blood, sweat, and tears, if that makes sense. So when you don't have the experience, when you don't have the track record, when you don't have the network, you just, you know, you're going to have to pound more pavement. I mean, I hate to say it, but you got to make it up somehow, right? It's not just going to magically appear. So, I would just, when in doubt, just keep going. Now, in terms of, you know, okay, well, what else could you do to maybe kind of adjust things to try to increase the probability of success? I would consider two different avenues. One is start going after maybe smaller companies. Smaller companies can be not such great clients because they're not very sophisticated. They're not used to working with copywriters. They might expect miracles. Sometimes they don't know what this stuff costs. However, if you're just trying to get something, right, some activity, so you can get experience with a client, get a couple of projects and more samples under your belt, you can go to smaller companies and lower your fees and get in the door that way. Right. So they're not going to be long-term clients for you, but it's a great avenue in terms of just getting something going, especially when you're discouraged and your motivation is kind of low, and you're kind of down right now on your luck. So that's one approach. The other one to consider is ad agencies and marketing firms. So ad agencies and marketing firms tend to have a steady stream of work, much of it requiring writing, and most of them do not have staff writers. So most ad agencies and marketing firms outsource their writing, and most of them will have a go-to writer or two. However, two things. Sometimes they have enough work that even their go-to writer can't handle it all, or that go-to writer may be too busy right now, may have another client, may have recently gone on maternity leave, whatever. There are a million reasons out there. So they're a great group to approach because they have a steady amount of work and they're used to working with writers and copywriters. So when you approach them with a warm email, it's easier to get a positive response. Because part of their job, when you think about the creative director in a marketing firm, part of this person's job is to have a file of go-to people that they can turn to at a moment's notice. Because if they can't, then their ability to deliver work to their clients is in jeopardy. It's compromised. So when you're contacting these people, it's something they're used to buying all the time. And there's a higher chance that you will be well received. Now, you will still get a, I don't have a need right now, but I'll keep your information handy. When you hear that from marketing firms and ad agencies, they're usually serious. I just had a coaching client in a different group have this experience about a year ago with someone who said, I'll keep your information handy. He just heard back from him a month ago, saying, are you still available? Are you still around? I have something that might interest you. Anyway, he ended up getting the project. A year later, this guy actually kept the information, contacted my client Michael, and they're doing business together. So it does pay to follow up with those guys too, by the way. But if it were me, I would continue knocking on doors, step up your effort. It is your full-time job right now, Taylor, and then just in terms of trying to increase the probability of success, going to start knocking on the doors of smaller businesses and ad agencies and marketing firms. They don't have to be local. It doesn't really matter where they are. What really matters is that they have clients in the healthcare, hospitality, and travel because those are your target markets, and those are easy to find. All right, let's see. Let me do one more question here from the webcast, and then we'll go to the phones. I see a couple of people raise their hand. Pat asked, I have a question about niches. I'm in health and education. I have opportunities to write for both, especially with small assignments and pro bono work for samples in my portfolio. Is there an advantage of doing both at this point, as I am relatively new in the B2B market and have contacts in both areas? At times, they are overlapped. Yeah, I would do both. If you have health and education, and if you have contacts in both, you're interested in both, then I would just go for it. I wouldn't be, and I've mentioned this before in other contexts, but don't limit yourself too much at first. So at first, in every way, you should be a lot more flexible in terms of fees, projects you take on, your positioning, etc. Just be more flexible, because right now you don't really know what direction your business is going to take. It's important to narrow something down, right? I've talked a lot about target markets, and at least define it. At least define whom you can help the most. Even if you have maybe three different markets, like Taylor has, healthcare, hospitality, and travel, that's fine. But be very flexible. And if you have opportunities in both, then go for it. Many times what will happen is, like you thought health was going to be it, and you threw education in there because you had some contacts, and where you're really getting traction is in education. And before you know it, all your work is there. You're getting referred. You're getting it's word of mouth, and you're landing a lot of work there, and you kind of drop the health, or you kind of make it a second, a way low second place. You kind of push it down. So, yeah, I would totally go for both based on what you just shared here, Pat. Let's see. RK asked, my question has to do with motivation malaise and how to deal with it. You touched a bit on this topic in the Effortless Productivity Program, and I still have to finish lessons 2 and 3. But I was hoping to get your thoughts on how you deal with periods of low motivation and general burnout of the prospecting process. I feel like every week is getting harder and harder to stay motivated, even though I haven't lost the vision of my goal. Yeah, it's, guys, I deal with this, you know. I would say almost every week there I do hit a point where I hit a low point of motivation, and in some cases, at least once a month, it hits me pretty hard, and it could be a few hours, it could be a day or two. So I'm not immune to this. And the other thing you should know, you'll never be completely immune from it. This will never end, okay? When you're in business, it is what it is. So it's really, how do you deal with it? It's a big topic. Let me kind of start tactically, and then we can move up a little bit. But I find that it's, especially with prospecting, just setting targets in terms of effort tends to work better as far as keeping your motivation up. By that I mean, rather than saying I'm going to get a client, don't set goals based on outcomes. So don't say, I'm going to work next week until I get a positive response from a prospect, or my goal for June is to land a client. I wouldn't focus too much on that. I would instead focus on effort. So this week I'm going to spend 8 hours prospecting, and that involves everything from researching prospects, finding their contact information, writing warm emails, getting them out the door. Okay. Let's say right now I don't have any projects and 8 hours is all I can spend on my business right now, then all 8 hours are going to be for prospecting. And my goal is to actually spend those 8 hours very focused on that task. The reason I prefer that, and it tends to keep me more motivated, is you have no control over who's going to respond when. So to say next week I want to land a client, or next week I want to get a prospect on the phone, you have no way of knowing if that's really going to happen. The only thing you have control over is your effort. So I find that it's more motivating to actually set a goal like that and achieve it, because, hey, you set out to do it and you actually got it done. And then I also like to reward myself, and it doesn't have to be anything big. In many cases, it's something like, opening a nice bottle of wine that I've been saving for, a couple of months. That sort of thing, making a really nice dinner. So notice these things are not, high dollar. But using that as your kind of added incentive when you actually reach that goal, it can really help. The other thing is just to, you mentioned it already, which is the vision of your goal. So just reminding yourself why you're doing what you're doing. Also knowing, at least for me, I find it very discouraging when I compare myself to others. Not everyone is this way, but I have a problem with that, where I'll say, well, gosh, how come that person is doing so well? What am I doing wrong that I'm not doing as well as she is or as he is, right? So that is a very dangerous trap. What I try to do when I have that self-talk is to, that self-critic just is a pesky little booger. When the self-critic comes out, I then turn the tables and remind myself of what I've accomplished. What have I done? And I realize, wow, many people haven't done this, haven't even tried this or this other, whatever I might be worried about. So I try to shift the attention to what I have done instead of comparing myself to others. So not sure if that helps, RK. Again, it's a big topic. I mean, gosh, we could spend a whole day talking about different specific strategies, but those are the ones that come to mind first because they help me get centered. And then the other thing I would say is when you do get any kind of win, even if it's just a positive response from a prospect, I mean, really celebrate that. Really celebrate that. That's so motivating. And then because of your new motivation, use that as fuel to continue what you're doing. So one thing I used to do a long time ago in sales is when I did get any kind of win, like a prospect responding positively, landing a, you know, getting a deal, I used to stop my prospecting because I just thought, hey, let's celebrate. And that's a mistake because you're now so much more confident and so much happier and motivated. You need to use that. So what I learned is, hey, when that happens, pick up the phone or send warm emails or, you know, follow up with prospects, things that I normally wouldn't do, but now I'm doing. And what happens is you got the renewed self-confidence and motivation to do a better job with those activities. Oh, this is really cool. Aphrodite says, not a question, just an observation regarding motivation. She says, I took up running and training for 5Ks and squeezed that into a busy client schedule. Having a physical slash mental goal helps with my work and prospecting motivation and keeping my vibration high. It really has made a world of difference. Yeah, thank you for that suggestion. That is fantastic. Agreed. You know, it's interesting. Like, we always think that, well, the way out of this, it has to do – the solution must have something to do with the problem. Like, it should be tied directly to it. And the way I'm approaching it, I need to do it differently. Many times the solution, as Aphrodite pointed out, part of the solution has nothing to do with the work you're doing. It's kind of stepping out of it. And in her case, focused on running and training for 5Ks. And having those physical and mental goals. The other thing, and that reminds me too, I've taken up, and I've tried meditation on and off for a few years, and I got into finally a really good schedule. It's the first thing I do in the morning, and that has helped. I know it's helping. I mean, it's not, I can't really prove it, but when I miss a day, I know it. It allows me to be more present, and it's just crazy. When you start getting into that meditation habit, it's crazy how many thoughts per second you have. And they're always about the past and the future. Rarely do we ever enjoy this moment right now and stay fully present. So when you do this every day, what happens is you become a lot more balanced in terms of your thoughts because you have kind of forced yourself to appreciate the current moment instead of worrying about the future and the past all the time, which is what most of our thoughts are about. All right, so let me go to the phones. We got a few questions. And this first one, this is a number in Valley Springs, California, and I believe this is Reed. Hello?
Yes, Sandy.
Sandy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well, good to talk to you.
Yeah. It's interesting because one of my questions, concerns, is the fact that I am a co-owner of a residential construction business with my husband, so I'm really struggling to fit in time. And I've been doing copywriting for our business for many years, and so now I'm struggling to figure out how am I ever going to retire and fit in time to do other people's copywriting and get prospects at the same time as I'm still working in our own business.
Mm-hmm.
So it reminds me of you having your children. I don't have children, but I have something that's almost worse, which is
yeah.
So the good part of it is I never lack for motivation because I always have something to do, and as long as you have other things to do, if you get frustrated with one business, you go to the other. So,
yes.
But there's still that problem of the distraction and trying to fit in. And I'm finding, I know that, I think the key is I was listening to your time management audio this morning, and it's got to be the blocking of time and figuring out how to do the blocking of time thing that
that's
I think
huge.
Might help it. And
yeah, it's crazy. It's something, I know it sounds ridiculously simple, but when you try it, you quickly realize how effective it is.
Right, right. So I think that's the only way I can figure out to do it and still have a life. And
yeah.
Then there's the niche, which I kind of got on the wrong call with you one time, and I never did get back to it. But because I've been doing what I've been doing for so long, I'm thinking of trying to do business or B2B writing for construction companies who are targeting contractors, which is not really, you know, I feel like I'd be very proficient at it because I've been doing it. It's not necessarily what I want to do long term, but to get my foot in the door and to have my website targeted towards one thing, it seems like that would make the most sense, and I was looking for feedback on that.
Yeah, so if again, let's think about the four dimensions, right? You obviously have the background and experience in that business, so that's a huge plus. The next dimension is your network, so do you have a lot of connections in that business? And I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Well, I wouldn't say that they're connections that are going to bring me copywriting business because they're more geared towards small businesses. And when I've talked to some in the past, it's not like they're looking for people. They're struggling to survive, and they're not looking to spend more money. They don't necessarily understand the value of a website and of marketing. And
these are, what type of companies are they, contractors?
Well, yeah, small. No, they're more small business, possibly door providers or a company that provides our insulation or that local kind of company. So,
okay, gotcha.
You know, I think I'd do better with large companies who really understand that they have to market themselves, like the companies you find in fine home building, you know?
Yes.
Something like that.
So that's actually the third dimension, which is the financial capability. And I go into – I would revisit session one because I talk about who's going to be a good candidate. And when you go through that, you realize, okay, door manufacturers, insulation distributors, you know – They just don't need to explain and sell and market their products,
mm-hmm.
which means they the whole writing thing, they don't get it,
right?
So I talk about what it takes, and when you go through that, you realize, okay, maybe that's not a good category. However, let's look at home builders. You know, home builders, do they need marketing materials? Do they need to sell and market their product? Yes, right? So just using that as an example, you can see why a home builder is going to be different in terms of a potential client from a insulation supply distributor.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you almost have to look at many times the best opportunities aren't necessarily directly what we've been working, but in adjacent sectors of that market.
But you would definitely target your website to one niche in particular, right? If possible.
Yeah, but at first I think it's smart to keep it a little bit broad.
Uh-huh.
So, like, your website could say that you work with companies in the residential construction industry. But in terms of what types of companies, you know, it could be home builders, for instance, that you target. So you keep it broad on your website, but your marketing, your warm email prospecting,
mm-hmm.
is to a narrow slice of that, if that makes sense.
I don't know if it does.
Okay, so residential construction is kind of a broad term, right? There are a lot of different
right.
types of companies in that category.
Right.
So you, and this is just an example. I'm not saying do this, but the example is residential construction is what you say on your website. But when you're knocking on doors, when you're actually prospecting,
mm-hmm.
you could prospect specifically towards home builders.
Okay.
Which is a category inside the residential construction industry.
I would think it would need to be large home builders, though.
Or whatever. I'm just using an example. I'm just saying that you keep your website somewhat broad in terms of the target market that you're going after.
Right. Okay.
But when you're actually prospecting, you go a little bit narrower within that broad category.
Okay. I think I understand.
And what it allows you to do is to try different narrow segments inside that market from a prospecting standpoint. Because if your website says large home builders in the San Francisco Bay Area,
right,
again,
right.
just an example, that's very, very narrow. So let's say you do all that work, put your website up, and then you start prospecting to large home builders in the San Francisco Bay Area, and you have very little success, and you realize, you know, I need to go to other segments of this market. Well, your website's already very specific. So now you have to change it.
Right. Okay.
So keep your website as broad as you can within the target market that you've decided on, which in this example we're using would be residential construction. But then your prospecting, try to go a little bit narrower, more specific.
Okay.
Yeah, I got a coaching client. She does very, very well, by the way, in residential construction. And she's gone, and she had the same experience. She found that the higher-end builders were her best bet.
Okay.
She struggled for several years with the really small builders and remodelers, and that was a real struggle.
Yeah, what I would think, yeah. Because
but you know what, though? There's nothing wrong starting there because I think what's important at first is just to get your foot in the door, get some practice. But so keep that in mind. It's okay to start there, but then start moving away from those people and go into the better segments of the market.
Okay. Okay.
So she doesn't regret starting where she did, but after 2-3 years, she was still stuck there. So
yeah.
We worked together to kind of move her out of that.
Okay. Thanks.
Make sense?
Sure.
Cool. What part of California are you in?
I'm about 2.5 to 3 hours east of San Francisco.
Okay.
In the foothills of the Sierras.
Of Sierras. Oh, beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful out there. Excellent. Well, all right. Well, good talking to you.
Thanks.
All right. You're welcome. Let's see. I think this is Sharon in Jupiter. Sharon, is that you?
It is. Thank you so much for answering my written questions before. I don't feel as panicked, and I really appreciate the feedback on the crisis communications. And my Twitter handle is all positive PR, and I really wanted to get away from crisis, which is one aspect of how I didn't like it, but I love the idea of potentially an audit or assessment or something that can be done quickly with the companies to get a foot in the door. So to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to look further at that. So I wanted to thank you.
I think that's great. Oh, you're welcome. And you know the deal, right? So there's a lot of work up front to create that framework and that template. But once you do that, then incrementally for everyone you do, it's not a lot of time.
Right. And I had actually thought of that in my brain when I was in sketching this out, when I was thinking about asking the question actually in the last day or so, but I hadn't put it into as much of a framework as you laid out for me. By the way, I'm a longtime meditator, like 40-something years, and I couldn't live without it. So.
Ah, cool. I'm a total amateur, so it's good to know that.
The thoughts are the thing that you have to kind of ignore, you know, then be here now.
Yes.
At least.
Yeah, that is, I think, for everyone, right? It's the creeping thoughts. It is crazy. But you know what? It makes me more aware of how easily I get distracted. And I used to feel really bad about that and beat myself up for it. And now I realize, well, wait a minute. Actually, this is part of the benefit. It's just realizing how quickly those monkeys start appearing.
Yeah. I think we're all ADD a little bit just because of iPhones and Facebook and so many different tasks anyway. So to ignore that and meditate is a good thing, I think. You know, I wanted to mention, somehow I've sort of working on work for attorneys now seems to have just come to me, even though it's not an area that I've pursued. But I have a big network with attorneys because my sister has been an attorney in Coral Gables, Florida, and I've traveled with a lot of attorneys. And it's another one like that seems negative, but I have seen on the one of them I'm writing something for now, they have a blog on their website, and there's nothing there. It says, check back later, we'll be developing this. And I know they don't have a writer. The same thing for other companies that have on their website newsletter, and you look at it, and you see they haven't published one since July of 2014 or July of 2015. So I want to get your thoughts on how to – is that a good way to target people, to try to do those for them, or what's the politically correct or smooth way of – you don't want to say, well, I just see you have a newsletter, but you haven't put anything up there in a year. Can I help you? That's not how I would, of course.
So, yeah, it's a very good question. I'll give you the general answer, and the real answer is you have to test both approaches and see which one works best for you. But generally speaking, it's counterintuitive. If you, and it doesn't matter if it's an attorney or a law firm, any other type of business, it doesn't matter. The results have been, in my experience, about the same. We think that if they have a page for their blog, and they have nothing there, or it's been 3 years since I've updated, oh, there's a need. Great. Let me approach them because they're going to, like, need me, right? The opposite is typically true. Two things happen. It's very difficult to tell them that they've been screwing up.
Right.
There's no nice way of saying it. There are nicer ways, but there's no perfect way. And second of all, there's a high chance that they just don't see enough value in it because, first of all, they haven't been doing it, and they haven't even paid attention to it. So what's going to change now? You telling them they should be doing it or they should pay attention to it is not going to be it. So the counterintuitive part is that you usually have a much better shot with companies and firms that are already doing what you want to do for them.
Mm.
You know, Michael Master and Mark Ford over there at AWAI said something years ago that it always stuck with me. He says, if you sell high-end watches, You don't want to sell high-end watches to people who don't own a watch. You want to sell high-end watches to people who own several watches. That has always stayed with me. It's like I'm not a watch person. I'm not a car person either, but I got a friend. He's totally into watches. This guy has a display case in his bedroom for his watches. Like he wears a different watch every day. He, like, polishes them. And why would you need more than one? If you like watches, you're going to buy a lot of watches. So it's the same thing here. You want to see where there's already a demand. You think, oh, yeah, but they're already doing it. Why would they need me? You never know what's happening behind the curtain. They might be stretched thin. They, you know, barely keeping up. They may be glad to work with someone who could, you know, take that over. Maybe the person doing it doesn't really like it, whatever. But the chances are higher with people who are already doing it. Again, you have to test it at the end of the day to see, but my experience has been in most cases that's what's going to happen. Go where there's already a demand.
Okay, great. That was the newest thing I was curious about. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know what? And I happen to know a little bit about attorneys, especially with attorneys. Attorneys tend to be not the greatest clients for writers and copywriters. And I'm speaking generally here. This is I never worked with them, but I've talked to several people who have. They can be a real pain because all attorneys think they're great writers.
Right, they do.
So why would I need a writer? I do this all the time, right? So it's a small percentage of attorneys that get it. You just need to find who those are. Attorneys is probably one of those markets where I would be very inclined. If you started getting success and you realize, you know what, I really enjoy this crowd, I want to do more, it's one where I'd be very inclined to do more attractive marketing, inbound marketing, which we're going to get into in an upcoming session. That way it's a more efficient process. Rather than knocking on a bunch of doors, create a system where they come to you, and when they're coming to you, you already know they're pre-qualified to a certain extent.
That's a great idea. These just happen to be things that have come to me through people that know me and know what I do. So.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, in that case, yeah, pursue it. Check it out.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. All right. Let's see. Next, I have somebody in Arlington, Texas, or at least in Arlington, Texas, number 817 area code. You're on.
Hi, Ed. This is Robert. I'm in Texas, not in Arlington, but close enough.
How are you, Robert?
I'm good. First, thank you for your comments on my website. I implemented almost everything that you suggested, and the last thing I'm just waiting on. So I appreciate
cool.
the input.
My pleasure.
Okay. I have a couple questions. One, I had a campaign undergoing of prospecting right before I started this class, and sent some stuff out shortly before our last meeting, and actually got a short but polite response from one VP of a company I'd be happy to work for, and her response was, well, no, I don't need your help because I have two PR firms and in-house people that do work for me. However, I wish you the best of luck. And then a few minutes later, she apparently forwarded my name to one of the PR firms because shortly thereafter I got an email saying, please contact me in a month. And it was not an email address at the target customer's site. It was a company I'd never heard of. My first question is, so I'm assuming it's one of the agencies. Since this VP was very very nice and polite and wishing me good luck and all sorts of stuff. So do you have any wisdom about talking to someone who's an agency? You've already mentioned it somewhat here, but this is a little different in the sense that she has been apparently given my name, referred indirectly from one of her customers. And I wonder if you have any suggestions about how to talk with her and in particular how to talk about price.
Sure. So the first thing I would do is I would look at the email address and can you is it a generic email address like a Yahoo or a Gmail, or can you tell what the domain is, the URL?
It's been a couple of weeks since I looked at it. It didn't decipher to me easily when I first saw it. So
it wasn't like, you know, abccompany.com or anything like that?
No.
So Jim at 4275,
yep.
You know, something like that?
Yep.
That's the first thing I would do is I would try to figure out, okay, can I do some detective work and find out what
right.
company or firm this is, right?
Yep.
The other thing that I would say is a last resort, if it's really cryptic and you can tell it's like somebody from somebody's Comcast or, you know, like Comcast or Gmail or whatever, I would
right.
still punch in the whole email address in Google.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. Sometimes, maybe one out of five times, you'll see that person, you'll find some more information about that person because they've posted their email address in some places, and then you'll at
right.
least get a name. You might find out a little bit more about them.
Okay, that's a good idea.
I would also look them up on LinkedIn.
Mm.
Now,
good
if
idea.
It's a very common name, like
yeah.
Amy Smith, good luck, right?
Right.
But if you have some information, if it's not a common name or if you have some other clues you can punch into LinkedIn, such as general geographic area, that could help you.
Yeah.
So, in other words,
okay.
what I'm saying is do some detective work and see if you can find out who this person is, where they work. Because
right.
let's say it is that. Let's say it's one of their PR firms.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can go through their website, you can learn a little bit about them, and then when you follow up with that person, you have something to follow up with. You got two things. You would have two things. You got one right now, which is they've told you to follow up with them in a month. Okay.
Yep.
The other thing you would have if you found out who they were is you would know what kind of work they do, what kind of clients they have, and you would have
right.
a little bit more you could talk about. Hey,
right.
you know, John, following up with you as you suggested – regarding, you know, copywriting work. I know that you guys do work for, you know, the software
right.
and healthcare industries. I happen to have experience in both of those, whatever, right? You have something
right.
more to go on.
Yep. Okay, sounds good.
So I can't give you an exact answer because we don't know, right? All I can say is this is how I would do the detective work and see if you can maybe get lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, let's assume it's one of the PR agencies. I just have a suspicion it is because it came so fast back. It was within half an hour after she mentioned she had two PR agencies, and all of a sudden the VP had forwarded this email to somebody, and it wasn't in her company. So let's assume that it is an agency. You got any words of wisdom about dealing with the pricing in such circumstances?
Have you gone through sessions 6 and 7 yet?
Yeah, but I need to go through them again. I thought the only thing I thought about was obviously they've got to mark up whatever they charge,
mm-hmm.
whatever they pay me in order to still make their profit, and I'm somewhat clueless as to how much. I mean, I've been in other consulting business, but I have no idea what their kind of markup is for them to make money.
Okay, yeah. It varies. It's kind of all over the place. General rule of thumb is somewhere between 30 and 50% their markup.
Okay.
So what I would do is, I mean, and I'm recommending that everyone, if you have very little experience, no experience, so you're just starting out, which is, you know, pretty much most of you guys,
right.
that you take the fee schedule that I shared with you,
yep.
and you cut that back by 30 or 40%.
Yep.
And again, with the understanding that, guys, this is not going to hurt you. The goal right now is to get some traction, to get some activity. Who cares? You know,
right.
You just once you get that, you can start getting them up as you start getting some clients and some experience. So I would probably, you know, just to be safe, I would probably cut those back 40 to 50%.
Yep.
one way you could approach it. But the reason I asked about session 6 and 7 is you still want to follow that structure and that path.
Okay. Right.
In terms of leading the conversation. The other thing I will say is marketing firms, PR firms, ad agencies are very used to pricing their services by the hour, billing their clients
right.
by the hour. Therefore, with their vendors, people like us, it's going to be the same thing. How much you
Yeah, I was expecting
hour.
That.
So be
yeah.
ready to answer that. You can go down the path of, well, I really don't have an hourly rate. I charge everything. I price everything fixed fee. I would still lead with that. I think it's worth
okay.
attempting because many of them will work with you even then.
All right.
But let's say that they tell you, worst case, hey, that's not going to work for us. We really need to have an hourly rate. That's the way we bill our clients, yada, yada. Then, you know, it's up to you. You know, there's a danger of going too low.
Yeah.
And there's a chance you could turn them off because, gosh, who is this guy? Must be a total amateur. or, of course, too high. I would probably quote somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 to $70 an hour.
Mm.
And again, I don't
okay.
know much about Robert, your experience and all the other factors that would go into that, but that's probably a safe range. Again,
okay.
with the understanding that that's not necessarily where you guys want to be forever, but
right.
if you're talking about getting in the door somewhere,
yeah.
and doing a couple of projects, it's, hey, I think it's worth it.
Okay, so that sounds reasonable. I was thinking of asking about 40, so that just confirms my intuition, so that I'll go in that direction.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my first question. The next one is, I did a lot of looking for getting prospect names. Since the last call, and I've got a whole bunch of nice ones divided up into two categories, what I would refer to as small as medium-sized companies, that is to say anywhere from 20 to 500 employees, and then big ones, some of them are massive. And I think I know how to deal with the normal-sized companies. I'm a little unsure about the getting in the door with a company with 20,000 employees. How do you find a person that you need to talk to? Since I want to do obviously B2B writing, things like online video and content pages for webs and stuff like that. Got any ideas about how to find the right person in a cast of thousands?
Yeah, so when you're talking about a big company, Fortune 500, Fortune 100, you're going to find several people, but even with what I'm about to give you. You want to look for anyone with the term marketing director or marketing manager in their title.
Uh-huh.
I would start with director.
Yeah.
And if you don't find anyone or if you don't find too many people, then look for marketing manager. And so LinkedIn is perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if I'm looking at Hewlett Packard, for instance, huge company, Fortune 500, obviously,
mm-hmm.
I would go into the advanced search area of LinkedIn and then type in Hewlett Packard or HP, and then in the title I would put marketing director. And then I would choose, and I think you can still do this, current role only, because you don't want people
mm-hmm.
who have had that title in the past
right.
at HP, right? So
yeah. Okay.
And you're going to come up with several. You're going to get several results that are viable. And then the question is, well, gosh, who do I email all of them? Do I do them all at
right.
once? The answer there is do two at a time. What I like to do is I like to rank them. Let's say I find 12,
mm-hmm.
both marketing directors and marketing managers. I would rank them. The first ranking would be directors first, managers second.
Right.
And then do two at a time.
Do
two at a time and follow the process that I showed you guys,
right.
including
right.
the follow-up. And then if you get nowhere, then go to the next two.
Right. Okay. That sounds reasonable. Two other probably shorter questions. One, I way back 8 months ago, I had a prospect I thought was getting somewhere, a relatively small company. They had a new marketing manager, and I got this this reference by networking, the people who own the company, one of whom I worked with 20 years ago. So they had a real need. I spent a whole day analyzing their stuff and basically got back to the guy, the marketing manager, and basically gave him, I gave him a day's worth of consulting results in terms of, well, I need the following information in order to be able to write good copy for you. And I was going to be doing detailed web page content for him. And probably stuff that could also be turned into product briefs and other things. And so basically I gave him a list of very good questions that I needed the answers to. And then he said, okay, that's good. Give me a proposal. Never, it was just absolute silence thereafter. And I knew that there was a small company. And I priced this probably two-thirds, or excuse me, one-third of what your fee schedule is. I mean, I really put it low because I knew they didn't have a lot of money and I wanted to start out with something. So it was pretty inexpensive what I was asking for, and never heard anything. Do you think it's worth going back and doing a follow-up 8 months later? Who knows? Or is that's like totally,
absolutely
totally lost?
Yeah. You have, I mean, what do you have to lose, right?
Right, I guess so.
Yeah. If we're talking about it, Ed, in order to do that, I have to fly to Denver, then that's a different story. But doesn't cost you anything to follow up. By the way, without knowing the specifics, one thing that, and this is why part of the process that I taught in session 6 and 7 is so important, you have to narrow things down to a project. Because when you quote something that involves a bunch of different deliverables, it can be overwhelming to the client, or sometimes they just don't have the kind of the headspace to process too much of that right now. So I'm not saying that that's what you did, but I've seen many cases, and I've made the mistake many times, when you have, okay, you need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Then even if it's a low fee when you add it all up for what they're getting,
right,
it's a lot to process. So I like to, the way I like to do that, even though I know they need all 8 things, is I like to sell it like this. Say, look, John, these are the 8 things that, you know, based on our conversations and my research, you're going to need. However, I recommend that we start with a pilot project. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at number 1 on the list. This would really be a great place to start, because once you do number 1, you need number 1 in order to get number 2, 3, and 4 done.
Right.
So how about we start there and get a feel for each other and, you know, make sure we're a good match, that sort of thing. In other words, let's start with something small, low risk.
Right.
Once you get in the door like that, it's easier to get projects 2, 3, 4, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good. That isn't exactly how it went down, but it's a good advice anyway. Let's see. And one more question. I'm thinking I've got a good niche. You know, there's a total of 600 players, companies both domestic and international. So hopefully I can turn that into something. But in case it doesn't turn out, I'm thinking about adding a second niche. And the only problem is that the website, as I've written it right now, really is, I mean, one of my stated benefits on the first web page is I'm focused on this business, and that website has my business name on it. I also own the URL to my personal name, and I was thinking about creating a separate, almost the same website with my personal name, only being more generic. And I wonder whether you think that that's, in particular, if I decided that I wanted to go after a separate niche. And so my question is, whether you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
Generally speaking, I don't like the idea of two separate websites unless they're two completely different businesses. So, for instance, if I'm coaching freelancers and I'm also writing copy for clients, I need two different websites. Those are completely different transactions, completely different markets, but different niches. The tendency, there's a lot of debate about this too, by the way, but I've, for a long time, I've debated both sides, looked at pros and cons of each, and I found that at the end of the day, it's best to have one website, and if you need to, just edit the copy so that it works. For instance, healthcare, technology, and education. You can craft a narrative that makes sense for all those three. Like there's a way to do it. There's always a way. Now, in fact, and I've seen some really great examples out there of completely incongruent niches. And one great example, you guys may know him, is Casey Demchek. He's done some programs with AWAI, and so his whole message is, and it's a total mixture: medical devices, author, speakers, and coaches, and key message platforms. So the first two are industries or target markets, and the third one is a project specialty.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got them all in one website. He makes them work. Now, here's the difference. You can get away with that when it's proven. So, in other words, he didn't set out to do all those three. He started with medical devices. He ended up going to a trade show with a buddy one day for author, speakers, and coaches. He fell into it. And a couple of people approached him about, hey, you know, oh, you're a copywriter. You know, I need some help with the back cover of my new book that I'm writing. So he did it as a favor, or maybe for a very small fee for a friend. And anyway, long story short, he's developed a name recognition in that industry, and he gets a lot of referral business, does websites for a lot of author, speakers, and coaches, book copy, all kinds of things. And then he started doing key message platforms as a service. He loves to do those, and he's become well-known for that. So what I'm saying is it's been proven. In other words, he added those as he went along, and that's why it works. When it doesn't work is when you're basing it on theory. You know, I'd love to work for healthcare. I'd also love to work for home builders and hypnotherapists.
Right.
Those are my three interests. Now, do you have clients in those three? No. Those are my different. That's when I would say, you know what, I would start with one, which is your best probability.
Right. Okay, that's fine.
Right. So I'm assuming you have one right now that's probably your highest probability.
Yeah. And the other one actually is closer to what I spent much of my career in, which is part of the reason why I'm considering it. My current niche is not something that I have spent most of my career in, but it has a much greater growth potential. The recent business reports I've read, the industry marketing, saying that marketplace is going to be a $1 trillion marketplace over 4 years, starting in 2017.
Thing. You can still get away if the other market that you're not positioning yourself for right now is one where you have a lot of experience in. You can still get away with your current website because, again, I'm generalizing here, but you're going to have some contacts.
Yep.
And when you get in the door through your network, through introductions, your website doesn't have to do all the selling.
True.
So you can get away with more.
Mm-hmm.
I used to say, I know that my website says that I focus strictly on high-tech companies and software companies. But, you know, he came recommended through my friend Carrie, and I know that you're in healthcare, right? And so you're already pursuing me, or vice versa. I came in through a recommendation. it's much more forgiving. They're not going to say, oh, well, you know, I'm not interested because your website says this. It's not a cold prospect.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. I think I'll yield the floor to someone else now.
Okay. Good
Thanks
stuff,
a lot.
Robert. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Steve in Arkansas, how are you, my friend?
All right, I hope you woke up with a nice song running through your head this morning.
It's the same ones. Same ones. Oh, I stopped looking at the thread. It was driving me crazy. And you know what? It's the same two songs again. Not fair.
Yeah, good. Say, one first thing, I kind of wanted to follow up. I believe it was on last month's call that I had talked about dropping the ball on two prospects.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did, like you suggested, I sent emails to both of them apologizing and not explaining what happened, just, hey, I dropped the ball. Here's what I'd like to do. And I actually got a response back from one of them, who thanked me for my candor and transparency. And yesterday he sent me a project. So this one I'm jumping on with both feet real quick. And so it does pay to follow up, even if you've messed up, you know. I mean, we're not talking days. We're probably talking weeks before I got back to them. And so, you know, it can work. But like I said, don't make excuses. Just apologize and say, I dropped the ball. And then see if you can repair the relationship. And it works, at least 50% of the time in this case. But what I have a question about is something, it's not really similar. Well, it's kind of similar. I had a prospect get hold of me and ask me if I had a sample for a particular project or for a typical topic in writing. And I was honest with him. I said, no, I don't. I said, but I have an idea. Why don't we create one? And we'll actually work through a project like it was the real thing. And if you like it, you buy it. If you don't, I keep the rights to it, and we both win. I didn't tell him, but now I would have a sample to put on my website on that particular topic. But what we did, we started with a creative brief, and I might have sent – too big a one. I sent a full-blown creative brief, and I haven't heard back from him. Should I follow up with maybe a short version and see if that was the problem?
Well, first of all, but they've decided to move forward with you, right?
Yeah, he said, yeah, what it was, it's in an industry I'm familiar with, the particular topic I wasn't, and he asked for a specific topic, and so I said, no, I don't have it on that topic. But why don't we create one together? And he was all for that. He said, yeah, let's go for it. But when I sent the brief, I sent like a two-pager, and I probably should have done this because it's going to be like a blog article type thing.
Gotcha. It's a blog article. Okay. When did you send it?
It's probably been 2 weeks ago.
Okay. It's been a while. So here's the thing now, and I know this is just me. I have colleagues that send the creative brief, and no, it's like the client needs to fill it out. Ball's in their court. I've never really felt comfortable with that because I'm giving the client work. And I know how it is in corporate America. You know, when you give somebody work, it just stalls. So I've been much more of a proponent of having a project, what I like to call a project kickoff call, typically about 30 minutes, depending on the project, where I ask them the questions over the phone. And then I, depending on what I know about them in terms of time and availability and all that, I will take my master list of questions and I narrow it down to just the essential ones. And I ask the questions. Many cases I will ask if I can record the call because I don't take fast notes, and or you can just take notes as you go. That has worked much better for me than just giving the person homework because, yes, it can feel overwhelming, and now it's not that they're not going to do it. It's just it's not a priority right now because it requires work on their part.
Okay.
So it's a lot easier for people to just answer the questions verbally. So I would follow up if you haven't already and say, hey, how are things going with a creative brief? Listen, if it's easier, we can probably go through that in a quick phone call, 20, 30 minutes. I can narrow it down. I wouldn't say that, but just give them the time frame and see if that would be better or easier for them.
Okay. Actually, you know, I sent one with company information and all that kind of thing as a two-page creative brief, but really I only need four questions answered from him. One, his target audience, the particular topic for the article. It's in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning maintenance, which is part of my overall niche. And then what he wants to accomplish through this, and then any links to research material. Should I still handle that with the phone, or would that be could that be done with an email with just those four questions he just types in and sends back? It's kind of hard to get hold of as far as the phone.
Yeah,
but those
so maybe
are really
so
the only four questions I need for the for this particular project.
Okay, so two things. One is like, hey, from now on, here's what I would do, and then on this one, here's what I would do. But going forward, what I suggest, and this is for everybody, is don't send kind of your master list of questions or your whole creative brief. Always customize it, right? Because in this case, I'm not saying this is the exact number, but let's say your creative brief had 12 questions, but you only really need four answered, right? So you could have probably really made this a lot easier by just sending them the four that you needed to begin with, right? So always customize it. Don't just send the standard general document going forward. Yeah. In terms of how to salvage this, then yes. Then in this case, say, hey, Bob, just following up on that. Actually, you know what? What I really need are just these answers to these four questions. Would you mind, you know, giving me some feedback on these? If it's and then if it's easier, we could probably schedule a 15-minute call sometime next week and just go through these. Just let me know what you'd prefer.
Okay. That sounds good. I'll do that. And kind of a suggestion, I know there's probably some people like me who still work a full-time job while they're doing this. As far as scheduling phone calls, I found an easy way to do that that works for me is that and it still lets the prospect think they're in control, is that I will give them time slots. So I have these two time slots available Monday, these two time slots available Tuesday, which would be better for you? And they think I'm giving them a choice when actually I'm limiting them to when I'm available. And I found that works really well for me.
Yes. That's a great idea, Steve. I love that. In fact, something else to consider is to use a tool that's linked to your calendar. And they click on it and they select the times. That also prevents a lot of back and forth.
Cool.
And
okay.
There's several out there. I use TimeTrade, so TimeTrade.com. There's another one called Calendly, so Calendly, Calendly.com.
I've had somebody use that with me.
Yeah.
Schedule a call with me. They use Calendly, I think it was.
So it's taking what you just said one step further and making it even easier. And here's where it can come in real handy. On a Monday, you try to schedule something with them for either later that week or earlier the following week. Let's say that by the time they respond, one of the slots that you gave them is now taken. It prevents that from happening, right? So they, of course, invariably they're going to select the one that you no longer have available by the time they get back to you. Well, these systems already have that blocked. So instead of giving them time, say, great, well, listen, here's a link where you can, you know, pick a time that's good for you and schedule directly through that. You know, just let me know. And then they can do it. You're not giving them time, so you're just giving them the link, and then that link acts as your calendar, which, you know, you control.
Yeah,
and you could have, I know you work, what, Thursday through Sunday? Is that when you typically work?
Yeah, I work at my job Thursday through Sunday, so Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesdays are wide open, and then, of course, in the evening, because I do work internationally too. So sometimes I've got to call it night.
Yeah, and then you just block out those days, you know, every week. And nobody's really going to think anything. I mean, a lot of people do that, right? I block out Mondays and Fridays in my time mm-hmm. trade calendar.
Okay. Is there a fee on time trade or Calendly?
There is. I think both of them have a free trial.
Okay.
It saved me so much time, though, that for me, I don't even know how much it's totally worth the investment. But let's see, basic. They have a basic options Calendly that's free. And then the other one is $8 a month, it looks like. But you can still try it for free.
Yeah, eight a month's not bad if it can clean up your schedule.
Yeah. I mean, if what you're doing is working, stick with it. It's just for me it wasn't, because by the time people got back to me, that slot was taken, and that created more work.
That also sends an automatic reminder, doesn't it?
It does.
See, I've had to do that manually, and so this would take care of that.
I think that it depends on the system. On many of them, at the end, it says, do you want to go ahead and add this to your calendar? So if I'm booking time with you, Steve,
mm-hmm.
I pick the time, and then the system, some systems will ask me, okay, Ed, do you want to go ahead and put that in your calendar? And I say, yes, it adds it to my calendar, which at that point, my system is the one reminding me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
yeah.
I think many of them will remind you anyway.
Great. Well, that helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, and good to hear on those clients you're able to salvage, or that one. That's awesome.
Yeah, at least one, yeah. That's, I mean, in 50%, it could turn into good. Oh, by the way, this is kind of an editing-type project. They're actually writing their content, and what they want me to come in and do is fix it. They're pretty good writers, but they want me to make it more reader-friendly and pump it up for SEO. What would you charge on a project like that? Obviously, it wouldn't be as much as if I had written the whole article or web page.
Yeah, so what I like
kind
to
of
do
a ballpark,
I usually do somewhere between 30 to 50% of what I would charge to write it from scratch.
Okay.
Not 30 to 50% off, but 30 to 50% of. And it depends. So what I like to do is I like to test out one of them by editing the first few paragraphs on my dime
mm-hmm.
to get a sense for how hard it will be, right? Because you can look at it and go, oh, this doesn't look bad, but until you get in there under the hood, you won't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I also factor in their expectations and that kind of thing. Sometimes it's just they don't look bad, but when you get into it, you start realizing, man, this is going to need some structural changes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is, in those cases, it's almost like writing a new one, you know? So now, in those cases, mm-hmm. I tend to get much closer to the fee that I would charge to write it from scratch.
Okay. What about for the SEO work? Because that would probably involve some keyword search and
yeah. How much can they give you there? Can they give you some keywords? Or are they leaving it up to you?
I should be able to. Yeah, they're pretty much leaving it up to me. Well, they hadn't said a whole lot about that yet. We're still kind of in the dipping your toe in the water phase. So. But from what I've seen on their site and their target audience and their product, they do a pretty good job using keywords that are relevant. So
the cool thing about that is now you're creating a bundled service. It's harder for them to figure out exactly how much you're charging when you add SEO, because
mm-hmm.
they can't look at it. When it's just editing the articles, they can kind of measure it by or gauge it based on the length of the articles, right? But when you add SEO, it makes it a little bit muddier, kind of like the phone company does when they bundle TV, internet, phone, right? It's hard to figure out exactly how much you're paying for your cell phone. Right? So that's that you're in a good situation. SEO is a higher perceived value service. So it's hard to say what I would tack on, but let's say you're thinking $150 to edit each of these and they're shorter pieces. I wouldn't be opposed to adding another $100, $150 to mm-hmm. it.
Okay.
You have to be the judge based on where you are and where you think, how price sensitive they are. But what I'm saying mm-hmm. is it's you can comfortably put something in there because it's now going to be a little bit muddy and hard to decipher.
Okay. If this turns into be a regular gig, if they continue to add pages, would this be something that would be good to set up as a retainer service?
Yes, absolutely.
And that way, I have to tell them they'd be at the top of the list, and I could probably after a month or two judge exactly how much work will be coming in. So.
Yeah, and so that's another bargaining chip there. It's like, oh wow, Steve, it's a little more than we thought. Okay. How much? Just throw it back at them. How much did you have budgeted for it? Well, you quoted us $300 for each of these. Man, we were thinking no more than $200. And then you can come back and say, well, I'll tell you what. What if we did three of them? If we did three of them, I could do $200. I'm just saying. Let's just assume they gave you one, right? Maybe you do
right.
three of them, or you could, and because it's going to be hard to sell the retainer the first go around. I think it's best to do that
right.
pilot project,
mm-hmm.
build your trust, and then offer that.
Okay. Well, that answers my questions. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay.
Next.
Next. Let's see. I don't see any raised hands, but I'm going to go to the webcast. Christy had a question. She says, can you elaborate on using email to reach prospects in Canada? Okay. So I have a if you go back to the prospecting lesson, I believe it's session 4, you'll see that I have a document, a PDF in there, Christy, with my take on the whole, kind of spam laws in both the U.S. and Canada. It's just a summary. It's not any kind of, legal advice or anything like that. But Canada passed a couple of years ago with probably the strictest spam laws in the world. And essentially, unless you have a business relationship with a company, you cannot send them email. We cannot send them an email to solicit business, okay? Technically, that's what it is. Now, as you heard, I know Christy was in a call that I was doing with Steve Slonwhite earlier this week. Steve Slonwhite lives in Canada, and he's found that it's not as strict as it sounds. They're really going after the big spammers in the world. And even though that's what I gathered too, when you read the law, that's not what it says. So I can't tell you to ignore it. And say, well, forget it. I don't think that I'm going to go after you anyway. I can't just say that. Only you can make that decision. But Steve's conclusion was, look, if you send a very personalized and relevant email, such as a warm email, like I'm teaching you to do, you're not going to be called out. You're not the problem. The problem is the spammers who are sending irrelevant spam messages and solicitations they're just spreading it all over the country. So, but in terms of the specifics, you'll find more information there. And then he gave us a website where you can learn more about the Canadian law. And for those of you who are interested, that website is fightspam.gc, as in generalcontractor.ca. So fightspam.gc.ca. And you'll find some very detailed information there. All right. Let's see. Minnesota, I think, was this Michael? I think this is Michael.
Yes, it is.
Hello? Hey.
Can you hear me? It's Michael
again. I can hear
you. Yeah. I have another follow-up question, but this has to do with prospects who've responded back to me. And by the way, I haven't really been setting the world on fire in prospecting, but I have sent out 61 warm emails, and 10% of them have actually responded back to me. So that means 6 people have responded back. 4 of them basically said that they don't need any outside services. 1 said to get back to me later. And the one I want to ask you about is actually a business in Canada, as a matter of fact. And they said that they wanted to look at my credentials and then get back to me and see if my skills fit their future needs. And that was about a week ago, and I wondered, how do you handle getting back to a prospect who did respond to you like that?
Yeah, so I would get back either, you know, next couple of days or sometime next week. And I would just always take whatever they give you and use that as the follow-up excuse. So something to the effect of, hey, just checking back. I know you mentioned you wanted to take a look at my background and then see if there might be a fit based on that. Checking to see if maybe we can schedule a – so one thing I never do is I never say, did you get a chance to do that? Because you're giving them an easy – no. You're giving them an easy way for them to say no. So I always ask something to the effect of, this is what you told me. I'm checking to see if it would make sense for us to schedule a brief discovery call sometime in the next week or two to discuss your situation to see if we may have a potential fit.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Use it almost like that, almost word for word. And it's a very low-key, very professional follow-up approach, and you're not calling attention to the fact that, you know, they were going to check this or do that. Take the emphasis away from that and just see. But I think, yeah, I think about a week and a half, 2 weeks is about right. And if you don't hear anywhere from there, you know, I got kind of a basic follow-up sequence in session 7, I believe it was. You need to alter that based on what you know about the prospect and if and when they have responded to you. But use that as your guide. I would probably follow up a couple of times after that if you don't hear back. But you know, kind of spaced apart.
And even if they don't respond,
Michael, after all those follow-up attempts, I would give them a break of, let's say, 2-3 months, and then go back to them. And this is when it really pays off to have a contact management system, because it will alert you to that. If you set it up that way, it will remind you to go back and check back in with those folks.
Okay. And with those other follow-ups, have you used the same message?
With the follow-ups now, you mean?
Well, the later follow-ups, like if they don't, let's say I follow up in 1.5 to 2 weeks and I don't get a response, and then later I decide to follow up again, do I use a different approach when I follow up?
Yeah, I actually stick to pretty much kind of that same message. And then the one I do change is the last attempt. And I have a script that you can model there in session 7.
Okay.
You can base it on that, because that one is basically telling them, hey, I'm not checking back in with you. There's 2 different approaches you could take. It's that one, and the other one is the obviously things have changed, priorities may have shifted. That's fine. I'm here if and when you need me. So
okay.
you don't make them feel bad. You don't try to embarrass them or in any way. You just keep it very professional. And then what you do when you follow back up, when you reach out to them in 3 months, then you start all over. You kind of start with a warm email again.
Okay.
Yeah, because by then, like, you just think about it, it's like a reset. They would have forgotten about you.
Right. Okay, that's good. I'll go for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you, I mean, I know these things sound silly. I have I've gotten very far in my career, both as a sales professional and as a freelancer, based on what I just shared with you. Following up in a methodical and professional way. It sounds silly, but my gosh, I've done it long enough to know that there is real money in the follow-up. It's totally worth doing. You just have to have a methodology. You need to have a system, and that's what I gave you in session 7. It's that important. All right, so let me check here on webcast. I don't see any other questions. All right, guys, I don't see any other questions, so if that's it for today, a couple of reminders. One is, again, so next week we'll continue the training. I have the more intermediate and advanced session on warm email prospecting, so be expecting that next week. Well, of course, as usual, we'll send you an email letting you know that it's available. And next month, we will have 2 group coaching calls. So one early in the month and one later in the month. The reason for that is I want to give you some extra support as we wrap up, just to kind of arm you with whatever you need, any feedback you might need, any concerns before you go out on your own. So just keep that in mind. There'll be 2 opportunities in July. I encourage you to try to make both. The other reason for it, too, is being summer. I know some people taking time off. And that way, if you're out 1 week, you know, that won't be your only opportunity. You'll have a chance during the other call. So let's continue the conversation in the forum. Again, I'm usually there every other business day at a minimum. Many times I'm checking once a day. I am taking a little bit of time off this month here and there. But I will continue to check on and off. When I take time off, that's when I may be there every other day instead of every day. But I will get back to you. So with that, have a great rest of the week, a fantastic weekend, and I'll see you guys in the forum. Take care.